What up? Back again.
It's me, Michael.
It's me, Avadesi.
How's it going?
How's everyone doing? Yeah, everybody, we're back. Brand new Techish. Get ready to be amazed. Here we go. Boom. Okay, so there's an article that I read. Somebody actually posted it on Twitter and saying, can you guys talk about this? It's a HuffPost article talking about how did the rich keep their average kids at the top? Okay, now, so it's basically all about nepotism and how, like, they use a parallel, or not parallel, they're using a parable of this dude called Zach Dell, whose dad is Michael Dell, the founder of Dell. So Zach Dell started a company in college that was a competitor to Tinder, completely failed, right? He got funding from all of his dad's best friends, failed. He did another company, which is meant to be like a non-profit helping kids in Africa, failed, right? Now, at 22 years old, he is an analyst at BlackRock. So essentially, he has just failed, and now he's still got an amazing job at 22, which most people would kill for, right?
Nice.
So, I guess everyone hates nepotism until it's their kids, but...
Oh, yeah, standard.
How do we fix that? Because basically, the article is alleging that, you know, and even, for example, like, I mean, people might say, oh, there needs to be taxes on, like, inheritance. But what the article says is that people don't now save their money and give it to their kids. They give it to they invest in their kids while they're still around.
Yeah.
Private school, you know, get them into the great universities.
Invest in their company.
Invest in their company. Daddy's friends get you into their company, whatever, right? And you know, the great book Capital, was it by Thomas Piketty? Capital compounds, but so does privilege to a certain extent. You know what I'm saying? Like, so does hookups. Yeah. Hookups and just, like, you know... being an elite, it just compounds to the point where the average person just can't keep up.
If your network is your net worth, privilege buys you access into different networks that other people can't be a part of. And the more of those exclusive networks you're in, the more people you can reach who can open doors for you, 100%. Create opportunities for you that you don't have.
100%. And they're basically saying that, like, it's not as if, like, these kids are super smart. They're actually probably average. And if they had to compete pound for pound for everyone else's kids, they wouldn't even get as far as this at all, right?
Of course.
Because, you know, people make the argument, if you've had the best education, therefore you'd probably come out smarter. But
yeah, but adversity. Adversity is like a unifying thread in some of the most successful people's lives. Because 100%. You build that resilience muscle.
Yeah.
And it forces you to be creative.
So how do we stop it then? What can be done? Is there anything that can be done?
I mean... first of all, having the conversation and calling out for what it is, I think is like incredibly, incredibly powerful.
Right.
We already talked about in previous episodes, the whole college scandal, all those rich folks buying their kids college places at some of the most elite institutions in the United States. I don't think the idea of nepotism, helping your friends will ever go away.
Mm-hmm.
For example, at the Labour Party conference here in the UK a few weeks ago, they talked about effectively abolishing fee-paying schools.
Abolishing private schools, right.
So one of the things that I thought is, what are people doing when they're sending their kids to another school? They're trying to basically like distinguish one group of people from another. Like, we are a more privileged group. We are a highly educated group or whatever. And I think you can always find ways to do that. Exactly like you just said, like people... saying, okay, I'm not going to save all my money so that my kids can inherit it. I'm going to find ways to spend it. I don't think finding means to support people within our communities will ever go away, or give people an extra advantage will ever go away, because there's something inherently
human about that.
Human about being competitive. And it's also a part of humanity and survival that we acknowledge there are a finite set of resources, a finite set of opportunities, blah, blah, blah. However... in some ways, that mindset is like super outdated, right? It's like been the predominant mindset for like hundreds of years, even thousands of years. That's basically what's driven capitalism and now got us to this point where in the more developed countries, we're in this hyper-capitalism state.
Yep.
Gap between riches and poorest is growing at an accelerated pace. It's absolutely disgusting. A handful of the most rich people in the world could pay off all of the rest of the world's debt. Yada, 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 yada. I think we need to like move more towards narratives about like how much better capitalism could be. And instead of seeing things in terms of scarcity, which is almost always false, think about how many more opportunities can happen if we collaborate and if we work together.
What does it look like on a policy level? So do you abolish private schools? Because the argument for that is... if everyone has to go to the same schools, then the rich are going to make sure the normal schools are great. That's what happened in Scandinavia. There are private schools and a lot, I think, in Finland, essentially. So that the problem with like public healthcare and public school is that the rich are not involved. They've siphoned off themselves into private healthcare and private schools, so they don't give a damn what the standards are of the normal government schools, right? So if their kids had to go to those government schools, you'd be damn sure they'd make sure they're of a great standard.
But they could also just pull them out and like tutor them at home or like,
yeah, that's true.
I don't know. Like there's also a degree where certain types of people don't want to mix with other types of people. People from a certain socioeconomic group or a certain class Colour. Don't want to, you know what I mean though? Colour. Seriously.
You know what time it is?
But the thing is, it's like we have to look at like the structures and we have to look at where power and influence lie. And, you know, if you look at the landscape of the finance industry in the US, the corporate world, technology, the industry we're in, like everywhere you look, when you look at where the most power and most influence are seated, it's still a homogenous group of people.
Completely. I mean, that's our bread and like, butter, right?
Let's face it, we are generations away from changing that. Let's not lie because, true. Right? Mm-hmm. Those people are mostly straight white men.
Completely.
Almost certainly going to be married to a straight white woman.
Completely, right.
So they're raising white kids.
Yes.
They're growing up with white privilege. They're completely, growing up with right. money privilege. They're growing up with education privilege. All these privileges are stacking up, like creating this coat of armor that makes them defenseless true. Against the adversity that people with those privilege face.
Yep.
There's no way for us to impact the privilege that they gain, nor is it as much as we could improve the types of privilege that we could gain, right? Because we don't really have control over privilege. It's basically, this is society. There's structures around us from patriarchy to white supremacy to whatever. So I just kind of feel like, I mean, I could almost argue devil's advocate. What can we do for our own in the positions we have available?
So nepotism, everyone's against it until it's their kids. That's what I said at the top, right? So I'm not going to sit in front that. If I have kids, am I going to not try to help them as much as I can? I am. I guess it's up for government and us, those of us who care about policy, to influence government, to set the rules of the game so that it's not completely stacked against people that are starting on square zero.
But I don't know if that's... Okay, maybe this is churlish, but I'm not sure if that's possible. I think...
Not completely, but...
To level the playing field.
To a certain extent.
Yes, I agree.
As in, make it more equal. So, for example, okay, if you don't want to get rid of private school, if you're like, well, I want to send my kid to private school, what about if there's a tax on the fees so that... And that's directly reinvested back into underprivileged children. Hypothetically speaking, I haven't thought this through whatsoever. Mm. This is, like, you know, shower thoughts, right? And there's other things that could be done. I don't know, just force elite universities to let more people in. That's another thing that Arthur talks about, how these elite universities hardly let anybody in. And the people that do get in, it's like legacy, sports, you know what I'm saying? And it's like 43, I think I'll get the quote here because it's actually insane. Last month, a Duke University study revealed that 43% of white Harvard students were not admitted on merit. They were recruited athletes, legacy, students on the dean's interest file, and children of faculty and staff. So that type of shit, yeah, first and foremost, this whole kind of like legacy stuff, that's got to go. For as in like, you shouldn't be let into a university based on who your daddy was. That's not fair at all, right?
One way you could flip it, this is the worst version of that. But in a way, understanding that the playing field is not level is helpful. And that's why communities like ours exist. Like in many ways, what I do with Hustle Crew is acknowledge that there's white male privilege giving people that look like that an unfair advantage. Mm-hmm. So then I'm like, okay, if you're underrepresented, what unfair advantage can me or the mentors give you by membership of this community?
Completely. This might sound like almost blasphemy. To a certain extent also, there is things that can happen where you end up just servicing the children of the black elite, for example.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
we're like, yeah, we got it. We've got representation. It's great. You know what I'm saying? I think it has to be a holistic look at, you know, class, race, and gender, and all those things to help people who are at the bottom. That's my two cents.
Hey everybody, so very exciting news. In case you've been living under a rock and you haven't heard this, on the 14th of November in central London, for the first time ever, we are doing
a live show.
Live show! So make sure you grab your tickets before they sell out so you can see me and Michael in the flesh talking about all the top tech stories from the year and
yes,
more.
Join us, please. Our tickets are still available. Ciao.
I saw K. Austin Collins.
Who's that?
He's a film critic at Vanity Fair,
got
actually.
Got it.
But he introduced me to a new part of TikTok.
Mm.
Do you have TikTok?
I don't use it, you know. I'm an old man, you know.
It's quite entertaining. To be honest, like it's like Ryan Hoover, founder of Product Hunt, that got me onto it. He loves it.
Yeah.
And there's this genre on TikTok I wanted to hear your input on.
Go on.
As a man, but formerly younger man once. So basically, teen girls.
Right.
are getting the voicemails that their abusive ex-boyfriends leave them.
Wow.
Right? Like, you know, these like teenage tirade rantings like, you slut wearing this, blah, 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 blah.
Oh my Lord.
And they're doing interpretive dances to the voicemails, playing out loud, posting it on TikTok. What do you think?
I want to see that ish right now. I'm not going to lie. That's genius. I mean, the TikToks that I have seen, the creativity is unreal. Mm. Like, it's unreal. Like, some of the, like, I saw one where they were like, the phone was inside a microwave, filming them outside the microwave. If that makes sense. And then they pretend they turn the microwave off, but then the people outside the microwave start spinning like they were in the microwave.
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, my mind was like, what's going on here? Like, I feel disembobulated because I'm like, this don't make no sense, but it's very, like, I want to rewatch it over and over again.
Wow.
So the thing that you mentioned, yeah, it sounds like a genius way of exposing, you know, quite a toxic culture that a lot of dudes think it's okay to move that way.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
I quite like that shift in a power dynamic.
Yeah.
That I find that quite interesting because it's, you know, everyone's been on the end of some kind of abuse from an ex. We've all been there.
Love me, man. What are you talking about?
And I just thought it was like really cool the way they like flipped it into this other thing. I think it's also going to be really interesting to see like who comes out of this TikTok generation as some kind of, I don't know,
star?
Future TV star, celebrity movie star. Because people came out of Vine.
Who came out of Vine though? King Batch, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
He was hilarious. And Vine died. Funny you mentioned Vine. Like, that was that should have been TikTok.
Why did Twitter kill Vine?
Because you know what? Instagram did Instagram video and a lot of the content influencers just left and went to Instagram video, right?
They were so different.
But Vine
though.
Was so amazing. The culture of Vine was the best.
That's the thing. The limited format, like putting that time mark and just being like, okay, they can be no longer than this or whatever. Just like with TikTok, it just inspires such creativity.
Yeah, I'm going to download it. Send me that stuff. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, man, I'm glad the dudes are getting exposed and I'm glad that people are doing it in a creative way because I feel like embarrassment as a tool is underutilized. I'm joking. When it comes to that kind of behavior anyway.
Do you say embarrassment as a tool?
Yeah, it's underutilized when it comes to that kind of behavior. Like when people are just like, you know, in a relationship where they're shouting at their ex or they're talking nonsense or sending a stupid message. Like, yeah, get embarrassed because it's nonsense. So I'm not going to mention who it is, but it was a prominent-ish VC who tweeted about...
prominent-ish.
I'm not going to... You know what I'm saying? Prominent-ish. No, he's got a blue check on Twitter. Like, you see what I'm saying? That's what I'm going to give you. Prominent-ish. Like... So anyways, he must have tweeted like, you know what? A great way for you to make sure that you're okay as a startup and to know how things are healthy is that you should try to raise money like every 18 months and check in with VCs to see if you're doing okay, whatever, whatever. And then that way you can know if you're on the right track.
So even if you don't need the money, you're just going to like...
Right. And everybody was like, in the comments, just obliterated this person. They were like, check in with the market, with your customers, rude boy. Don't. Why are you checking in with VCs? They are not gods. Who cares about VCs? Like, it's obviously
VCs. VCs are gods. Oh, did you not get the memo?
I got the memo, yeah. I ignored it, though. Junk mail. Straight to junk. I don't know. What do you think, Abba? Like, I'm going to put the tweet in the show notes so everybody knows what I'm talking about, but go on.
There is, like, there's VC Twitter. And I actually, like, follow, like, a few parody accounts because it's just, like, hilarious. The sort of lofty philosophical musings that venture capitalists are spewing out into social media. Basically, everyone's been seeing Naval and they're just like,
everyone's
I
a
can
monk
do
now.
This.
Everyone's a monk. Everyone's a stoic monk now.
Everyone's channeling their inner Naval, inner Paul Graham. I mean, how narrow can you be to say something like that? Like, how narrow-minded can you be to say something like that? Like, oh, here's a great suggestion for checking in like the health of your company. Go do a fundraising round. First of all, anyone that's ever danced in the fundraising world will know how much effort it takes.
Yeah.
Man, when I was fundraising, when I was in an incubator, that deck was changing every night.
Yeah.
Pitch deck's changing every night. Working your way for intros. It's basically a full-time job. Like, in fact, one of the biggest reasons why people are always encouraged to have like more than one co-founder in the early days of your company so that there's someone who can keep running the company when one of you's out fundraising. No, seriously.
You know that small task, right? That running the company, like, you know, that small, small task of like, you know, someone's got to do it, right? You know, like the main reason why you're there, go on.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like it's so disrespectful to the reality of running a business to encourage people to go out and do fundraising just for fun. In a way, it's kind of also disrespectful to his own industry, because are you telling people to take meetings or fight for meetings even when they don't necessarily want to raise? And also, like, I don't want to undervalue the process knowledge and experience and insight that venture capitalists bring to the world of entrepreneurship. But they're not, as you said, the be-all and end-all. And there are so many other ways you can get that information. And yeah, for me, it's just like, let's not forget, you just said skin in the game a moment ago. Think about people's motivations for saying what they say.
I think everybody just has to be mindful about like the incentives of everyone around them, and your VC's incentive is not your incentive, and that's it, bruv. Like,
not always, but yeah, I mean, some of them, you probably all have like a wide range of incentives, and some of them might align, like, let's make the world a better place.
Yeah, change the world.
But some of those more near term ones
completely
won't.
So, anyways, do you still want to be a VC, Ava?
Anything I can do to support future talent will be great. Yeah, I mean, I scout for fun, so I get to pretend to be one. It's not my money. I don't hate against that industry, but I hate against asymmetries of information that sometimes people in that industry perpetuate.
Expound upon that. What does that mean?
So, I think, just like this example you just gave, it's like you can be in a position to influence a certain group of people. Let's say you're an investor, you have money, you control that and have influence over who gets the money that you have. Therefore, the things that you say probably hold a certain weight amongst the people that want the money you have, i.e. founders, aspiring entrepreneurs. And you probably have witnessed far more cycles of companies succeeding and companies failing and all the different realities in between. So when you're speaking from a position that's actually very well informed about probability of success when accepting venture capital for all different types of companies and all different types of goals.
Got it.
When a founder comes to the table or happens upon your Twitter feed, their information is limited.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of venture is still privately held companies. So there's not very, you know, there's not a huge amount of access to information. Like you can try to piece it together, whatever. But yeah, like when a founder comes to pitch to you, of course you're going to tell them that, oh, we're so aligned on making the world a better place. Oh, we're so aligned on our passion. D2C is the future of consumer goods, whatever. But you're not going to say, the reality is, I know the probability of your success is infinitesimally small.
Mm.
However, I'm in the business of making bets,
and
you are one of many bets I am satisfied in making this year.
Yeah.
You can't say that.
Yeah.
That's demoralizing and that's crushing. But it also makes them, would make that founder doubt whether or not A, they should be going with you, or B, whether they should be taking money at all. Because they're like, well, if the chances of me succeeding are so small, perhaps I should not be taking on this risk of taking someone else's money and giving up ownership of my company.
This episode is sponsored by Guru. Guru is reinventing knowledge sharing, providing verified information from experts on your team, where you work and when you need it most. They are hiring on Pocket Jobs with roles in San Fran and Philadelphia. Link in the show notes.
So what do you make of this whole like Extinction Rebellion? These are like they're activists and they've been shutting down or trying to shut down train stations in London. I think, I don't know if they're doing it around the world, but it's definitely a British-based thing I've seen so far.
Yes.
So they'll stop the subway or the tube. They'll stand on the subway and the tube. And then like certain areas, they've gone into more traditional working class areas. They tried to do that. And basically got beaten up. They stood on top of trains.
They got yanked down. They got yanked down
and they got stomped out, literally. They got a good old fashioned football hooligan beaten. That's what it looked like to me when I saw it. I'm keeping it real. And some of the passengers were like, leave them alone, trying to defend them.
Mm.
But some of the other dudes who look like straight out of a football hooligan, like I'm keeping it real, they look like they were just not in the mood.
Mm.
And what do you think? I saw you tweet about it. You essentially were saying that are we now siding with our own downfall, essentially, like the people that are being like, the protesters? So what are your thoughts?
I really want Yuval Harari to tell me what he thinks about this. I feel like he is the man I need to hear slice this up and explain it to me.
Author of Sapiens.
Yes. I didn't know how to feel about that. When I saw this trending on Twitter, I saw videos that people were posting from the two platforms, mm-hmm. photographs of demonstrators being yanked down. Of course, I support the movement of Extinction Rebellion. Like, I fully side with this idea that we have one planet. I'm not convinced about this whole interplanetary existence.
Oh, definitely not.
Elon Musk
happening.
Ain't going to be putting me on a car, shooting me into space.
Yeah,
that's
happening.
For damn sure. So 100% agree with what they're doing. I think where I felt conflicted is basically, I feel conflicted about two things. One, where they choose to demonstrate.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that probably the richest people are hiding behind armed guards and they don't yes. want to put themselves in harm's way. So I get yes. that, right? Because if you try to demo at Goldman Sachs, you
gunshots.
Get hurt.
Yeah.
I get that. I totally get that. But at the same time, you know, the thing that I've tweeted about was basically when we are going against or interfering with demonstrations that are existing ultimately to protect us as individuals, right? Because that's what Extinction Rebellion is about. How do we protect our planet so we don't die?
Yes.
And also, you know, I have a huge amount of respect for them because the truth is it's a movement that's very much driven from the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the first people who will truly die because of climate change are in lands much further away. We know 100%. This, right? The Maldives
yeah.
are sinking, Sub-Saharan Africa, the Middle East,
yep.
et cetera.
Yep, yep.
So I have a huge amount of admiration for them because what they're basically saying is it's already happening. It's not happening here, but it will be. So mm-hmm. let's just start moving on it. But where I felt conflicted was, yeah, basically exactly the thing that you said, watching people fighting with the demonstrators. And these were just ordinary folks. They weren't like police or anything like that. And it just made me think, why are they doing that? Are they doing that because they don't agree with what Extinction Rebellion are doing?
I
hope not.
I'll tell you why they're doing that. They're doing that because they're, you know,
they need to get to work.
They're working class people. They need to get to work. They're tired. They might be going to see their relatives in the hospital. They
yeah.
have their own agenda during the day. And they are the least important people within our society with the least influence. They don't understand probably a lot of the macro situations that's going on. And they're like, I need to get to work. I'm on a 0-hour contract right
yeah.
now. And you're getting in my way, and I can't feed
my
family.
That's my livelihood.
Yeah, I can't feed my family right now. And
yeah.
You are probably some middle class kid who, you know, is concerned about things that don't affect me just now, right now.
Mm.
Get the hell out of my way. And that's these people are you know, and also ironically, Tube is actually the most eco friendly way to get to work.
Yeah,
and
it was very weird.
Strategically, they got it completely wrong.
Yeah.
And they have to reassess what they're doing because that is so dumb. Like, the whole thing was, even if you're right in spirit, action has to be
how
strategic.
Intersectional is XR, actually? Let's talk about that because maybe they need to get some more diverse voices in that demo planning meeting. You know
yeah.
what I mean? I also think, so someone made this comment. I mentioned in a previous episode how a friend of mine organized these meetups through Friends of the Earth to basically get women talking about how we can use our money to make world more sustainable, right?
Yeah.
And one of the women said, instead of Extinction Rebellion, or in addition to the demonstrations, why don't they give us the information that we as individuals need to become lobbyists ourselves? So, for example, mm-hmm. like imagine if Extinction Rebellion had a campaign that was everyone go to your pension provider and ask them to divest from fossil fuels or ask them to tell you where your money goes. Like,
right.
basically give us the questions to ask. Because the reality is, if you look on a chart of like how to make an impact on fighting climate change and you looked at like, oh, you know, eating less meat, don't have children, recycle, like on a bar graph, let's say all of those examples I've just shared are like 1 inch of the bar graph.
Right.
Changing your pension fund provider to someone that is actually sustainable or investing in sustainability is like a meter on that bar graph.
It could be, yeah.
And no,
well,
no, it is. Like
right,
someone's
cool.
done
yeah,
someone's
yeah.
done the stats. So like in terms of the impact that we could make, it comes through where we have an impact on large sums of money
mm-hmm.
sitting together, whether that's savings, whether that's pensions, whether that's your shares. And I just kind of think we need a bit more of that coming from XR as well.
Completely. And I think we have to understand that you're dealing with a population that's overworked, underpaid, and tired. You see what I'm saying? And like, they don't have, they're not going to understand the nuances of your arguments that way. You're not winning hearts and mind that way. And you're right, there is an education gap. And that education gap probably is exacerbated by the fact, because people are tired and underpaid, they don't have time to take in information that's probably good for them in the long term. They just don't. I just want to know, where are the billionaires? Like, why isn't Bill Gates funding an education campaign on that level? Because like you said, I don't know. I mean, we're not going to be able to solve climate
change
right now.
Too many problems to solve. I mean, there are a lot of really, really incredible people. Like, look at Sir Ronald Cohen, and people who are very, very rich and driving change through impact investing. Because what they're basically saying, like, let's stop investing only for returns.
Yeah.
Let's start investing for environmental impact, social impact. And there's some really interesting stuff happening in that space. And to be honest, it's great that finance and people in finance are thinking about that more, but we need to be thinking about our environmental and social impact in everything we do. Every founder that's listening, you need to be thinking about that. Every individual, you need to be thinking about that.
I think also we have been, this is one thing I would say, I think we've been trained to look at history and we look at people that have done successful protests. So everyone thinks that the way to get everything done is just through like that kind of activism. And I think that we have to think smarter. Stuff that you mentioned about, you know, divesting from pension funds and whatever, whatever. It's got to be stuff like that. I don't think like you're not all going to be Rosa Parks. That's it. And also what, I know, because they kept bringing up Rosa Parks. And the thing is,
why?
Yeah, exactly. Because everyone wants to be that star in history. That's the thing. Everyone wants to be that hero. And I think even the thing with Rosa Parks and that whole bus boycott, that was a boycott. That wasn't, you know, let's stop everybody getting on the bus. It was like, we're no longer, as black people, going to service this, use this bus company provider, and we're going to bankrupt them that way. That is a whole different proposition then. We're going to stop everybody from getting on the bus, because that wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, because also that's like a public service.
Yes. Yeah. So anyways, yeah. Extinction Rebellion, I think you fucked up. Pardon my language, and that's it. One more exit.
Oh, I'm so sad. It's the end of another show.
End of the road.
I'm gonna miss you guys.
Until next week.
And girls and non-binaries.
Yes.
Don't forget to use hashtag Techish to join the discussion.
And if there are any tickets left, have a look in the show notes for Techish. Hopefully it might be sold out by the time this episode's
Techish
out.
Techish Live! But have you're a gonna look. Hear the debut of our Techish duet.
Techish in the flesh. Let's go. Alright, cool. See you next week. Bye.